This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
And with us this week, because we have a special show for you, is none other than the co-host of Exploring Glorantha, the new show by Iconic Production, Evan. Evan, welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody. Thanks. Glad to be back.
Evan, outside of maybe Rob, you are our most reoccurring guest. So,
wow.
So we have a great episode for you this week. We're going to talk about the Zorak Zorani Berserker, a class in 13th Age Glorantha. Now, we did cover the Berserker in a previous season. You can go back and check that out in Season 2. But Brian, one of our patrons, asked us to do sort of an in-depth dive on the Zorak Zorani. And so that's kind of why we've invited Evan, because that just gives another voice to the Gloranthan side, like the mythology and the lore side of the Zorak Zorani. While the rest of us can also chat about the class. So the Zorak Zorani is a subclass of the Berserker. If you remember from Season 2, all those many years ago, the Berserker is basically broken up into two subclasses. The Stormbowl, which we've talked a lot about, and then the Zorak Zorani, which, aside from being fun to say, Evan, do you want to give us a little bit of a introduction to who Zorak Zoran is and why they are cool in the Gloranthan lore?
All right. Well, the Zorak Zoran is a god of death, disorder, and darkness.
The three Ds. So,
the three Ds. He is an ancient deity. His early experience was mainly getting burnt by the birth of light, which he discovered in the deep underworld and thought, oh, I better destroy that. And he revealed it and was horribly disfigured thereafter. And then the next big thing that he did was he snuck around as a silent stalker until he got his opportunity to steal death. After Kumak and Orlanth and many other famous gods use death for a variety of things.
Now, did we mention that Zorak Zoran is a troll god? He is not a human deity.
Right. He's from the Darkness tribe, yeah. And so is primarily a god of trolls. But anyone who's interested in death, destruction, and darkness disorder is welcome, as long as they can hold their own. So, of course, Zorak Zoran, like many sneaky disorder death gods, is an enormous jerk. And so what he decided to do with death, after Orlanth had killed the sun and already caused enormous problems, he decided to kill Flamal, who was the god of plants, and especially of food plants, and then eat him so that everybody else would starve during the Lesser Darkness. So, with mythic origins like that, you would think that, nobody would really like him, except that it turns out that he's really, really, really good at fighting chaos. And he spent the entire God's War just pounding chaos with his legions of death.
Yes, he's also known as the Lord Demon of the Legions of Death. Like that. I don't know if you've read Malazan, but he kind of comes across as like Hood to me just a little bit. Like maybe they were drawing on that a bit. But he stole fire. Like he also has a sub-rune of fire. When the Lesser Darkness happened and Yamalio, the son of Yelm, who was really just trying to step into his father's fiery footsteps, ascended to try and become a light, Zorak Zoran would have none of that and gutted him and took his fire, which is why Yamalio in the Ages of Time is known as the Cold Sun. Because his fire currently rages deep within the breast of Zorak Zoran. And I think that is possibly one of the reasons why his people are berserk.
So he is a contradiction, of course, a darkness god who controls fire. He wielded it expertly to fight back chaos, and that's why he's tolerated, that even though he did enormously terrible things in the early part of the gods war, when it was time to line up and decide whether you're going to fight chaos or you're going to be consumed by chaos, he gave his all to fight it. And so he's one of those deities that you wish you didn't need, but sometimes you need it.
I feel like that's, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like that's the case even with Stormbolt. Like, we're all happy when Stormbolt's around when there's chaos, and then we just sort of want Stormbolt to go away when chaos is past. What are your guys' thoughts?
Thanks. Could you leave now?
So, any thoughts on the origins of, I mean, so Mark and Nick, you have passing familiarity with Glorantha. Becca's been playing in my RuneQuest game for over a year now. Any thoughts on just the mythic origins before we get into the class? Because as we've commented many times, the mechanics of the 13th Age Glorantha classes are some of our favorite design because they really reflect the myths that they come out of.
Well, I had a question. The battle you talked about with Yelm, is that the one that's in the book on page 114?
Yelmalio?
That they're showing?
Yes, yes, with Yelmalio. That is the quintessential battle on the Hill of Gold, where Yelmalio shed his blood, and Zoroxaron stole his darkness powers. There's a larger story there, but we'll probably cover it on Exploring
Glorantha. Again, go check out Exploring Glorantha. The second episode will be going live here soon. It was live for the patrons, and if you want to find out more about how do I get started in Glorantha, if you become a patron of Iconic Production, we will invite you to the live show where you get to interact with Evan and I, ask questions, kind of help direct the narrative of the episode as we go through it. But that is for a different show. We're going to kind of come back. Let's do a brief overview of the class. The main thing that they have in common, the Berserker class, is the Berserker die.
Yes. Well, I played a Berserker in 13th Age. We kind of morphed a Stormbolt in. So instead of using the Escalation die, the Berserker uses the Berserker die. Stormbolt uses it one way. You can listen to that on another episode. The Zoroxarani devotee uses it a little bit different. It still replaces your two-hit bonus.
So with the Stormbolt, you set up your Berserker die to trigger your powers. But in this case, you actually you have to choose whether you're in control or not. And if you're in control, you have certain things that trigger. Nick, do you want to explain the difference between being in control and being berserk?
Yeah, other than the kind of the intuitive difference of you are in control of your actions and you've got your standard move, you can go wherever it is on the map that you want to go. You've got your attack, you got your quick actions. You could do things like casting spells or recovering or anything like that. When you're in that controlled state, the berserk state is when you kind of lose that sense of control. You end up basically going after what is the most tastiest looking monster that you're in combat with. And what the monster is, regarding which one's tasty or not, is dependent on whether or not your die roll is even or odd. You're either going to be going after the enemy with the highest hit points or the enemy with the lowest hit points. And you have an expanded crit range if you do attack the one that is tasty that round. But your damage is always halved if you're going against the one that's not tasty. Also, while you're berserk, you get some other bonuses and advantages to disengaging. And just basically, you're going to be throwing yourself around the battlefield, going after one monster one round, and then breaking free, run across the field, and trying to take a bite out of the monster on the other side of the round. So a very mobile character in the combat, but you don't always have a lot of say in what it is that you're going to be doing.
Right.
That being said, you don't have to go after the tasty creature. You still are able to control yourself in that regard, but it's to your disadvantage to do that.
Right, and it's also intend to be in control, because when you choose at the start of your turn, hey, I want to be in control, you still have to roll a d10, and if you roll equal to or less than the escalation die, you have to choose to be berserk that round instead. So the longer the fight goes on, the less likely you are to be in control.
Yeah, and it's not just running around smashing. There are a select few powers you can use while you're berserk. They're not many. And they're outlined specifically, you can use this while berserk. Otherwise, you have to be in control to do it.
And the attacks, that one of the things that I thought was really cool is that the attacks that you do while you're berserk, not only is your crit range expanded when you're attacking those tasty enemies, but when your attack roll is even against those tasty enemies, your berserk die starts increasing in size.
Mm-hmm.
So where you start with a D4, so you're going to get a max of a +4 to your hits, you could, by the end of the combat, if you stay in that berserk state and you keep getting those even rolls, you could be rolling against, you know, a D8 or a D10 if you take one of the feats.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be getting potentially like a +10 to your attack rolls if you stay in that berserk state.
Now, the other thing that Nick was pointing out is this ability that they have called Ignore Flesh Wounds, which allows you to pop free from one enemy while you're berserk as a quick action. But you also get resist damage against opportunity attacks. So it is the class that's designed to be, when you are out of control, you are running around the battlefield looking for that tasty target and sort of trying to ignore everything else around you. Now, the other thing, as Evan brought up, is that he definitely has the death rune, Zorak Zoran. And so Zorak Zorani have this ability to... They're a summoning class as well. Becca, do you want to talk about the Zorak Zorani, kind of what they can summon and why?
Having a berserker class able to summon, in this case, skeletons, I think it's a fascinating mixture of something that you would expect like a barbarian or a necromancer in your typical fantasy games to do, and you don't expect the barbarian to summon a fleet of troll skeletons to fight with them. So I think it's fun, and I think it would be a fun way to kind of surprise the baddies who aren't expecting that. But you have to be in control in order to do this, and you can summon your creature. However, there is the possibility that your creature you summon is going to be independent, your will, and they're going to attack who they want to attack and not necessarily who you want to attack.
Right, and once you bring them into play, they work a lot like the Earth Priestess. Some of the Earth Priestesses summon creatures where you really are rolling a D6. You don't have to spend an action to have them do anything.
Right.
You're going to roll a D6 and sort of... They're just as out of control in some ways as you are. So from a class features perspective, kind of what we've talked about with the myth, what do you think of it, the class features for the Zorak Zorani? This idea of summoning and controlled versus berserk.
With the summoning and the myth, at fifth level, you can summon fire elementals, which I think ties into the myth of capturing Yamalio's fire. And so I think that's a cool way to take the myth and put it into a very mechanical, you can see it. This Zorak Zorani has embodied their god's thievery. So, I mean, I like that idea.
I also like, with the skeletons, you'd roll, if you have control or they attack an ally, and it might be you, but with the fire elemental, just as an example, one, it's happy to use its vindictive flare on you because you summoned it, because it's not happy, which is a neat thing.
Mm-hmm.
You summon it at risk because it might start pummeling you.
Yeah, I'd say there's quite a few natural tie-ins in regards to the class features with the background of the Zorak Zorani that Evan, you were talking about, and especially that death rune that I'm picking out, even in the Ignore Flesh Wounds. You know, my first pass in reading through that was, well, that seems like a very trollish thing that would happen, right? You're this big, burly, hard skin, whatever. You can take it and you're just going to run on. But if you're playing a different race as a Zorak Zorani Berserker, that could very easily just be a manifestation of death. Like, you know, this is just flesh. I can keep doing what it is that I'm doing. This is all going to be passing anyway. Yeah, there's quite a few seemingly very natural ties in the features to the background.
I really like the 8 chaos one too. It really emphasizes the they're good to fight chaos. You drop them to zero and you get to eat them and regain health. It's kind of a neat one.
Well, let's look at the let's start into the talents. Were there, as you were looking through these sections, is there any talent? I mean, first of all, they've got the minion, the zombie minion, which is a variation on the necromancer's minion that they can summon. And this is I like that it is it ties into the disorder rune. You really never know what shape your minion is going to be in until the start of combat. If your natural initiative roll is 11 or higher, your minion is there to fight beside you in this battle. If you roll a 10 or less, your minion is in worse shape than you thought and falls apart uselessly because, well, you know, sometimes disorder affects you in a way that you don't necessarily want. What about any other ones either specifically to the Zorak Zorani or maybe one of the ones that cross over with the other Berserker variant, the Storm Bull, that you think, hey, this is really cool. If I were playing one, I would definitely use this.
So one of the talents that jumped out at me that I would probably take, and I didn't get the connection between it being a talent to choose from until we heard a little bit of the backstory, is Amonstan's Master, where twice per day when you miss with a melee attack, you can deal half the damage as fire damage to a random nearby enemy as a free action. And knowing that there's a bit of a fire-themed background or backstory to Zorak Zorani, it makes sense that that might be something that would just kind of burst out of you every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I really like the champion feat for that talent, that once per battle you get to re-roll your fire elemental roll, and it will never attack you, even if it's in the confused state.
Personally, I also like the bully talent, where once per battle is a free action. When you aren't staggered, you can reroll your berserk die and abide by that reroll. So those times where you roll your berserk die and you get a one, like, I'm going to reroll this again. Should be noted, there's also the inverse of that, the scrapper, which you can take, you can do that reroll only if you are staggered. So it's like, you have to make the decision when you're creating your character. Do you want to do that sort of berserk die reroll when you're healthy or when you're getting low?
I mean, we talked about it when we were looking at the two Berserker classes, right? The Storm Bull is all about, is the Berserker for the tactical-minded player. Set up mm-hmm. your powers, make sure that the engine is running well.
I want to play a ranger with a companion, and it takes them forever because it's their round and their companions. And this one, roll a d6, and we'll see what your companion, your summoned creature in this case, does, so they can't waffle too long. You roll a d6, oh, it attacks a random ally. GM rolls randomly, it attacks, it's done. You're not sitting there forever waiting for him to decide, what's my tiger do? You just move on. So that's kind of a neat to nip that in the bud. We all have those players.
Sometimes we are those players.
At times.
Evan, what about you? Anything that we've talked about mechanically that you're like, from a design or from a player or a GM aspect, that you really like about this class?
Well, you know, in it being different than the Storm Bowl, I like that you have these two sort of poles of design for the Berserker. It's not a Berserker is not just one thing, but you know, the thing that ties it together is that there's the Berserker die, and the building fury is independent of the
mm-hmm.
energy that's generally going on with the escalation die. For the Zorak Zorani, there is this slyness to Zorak Zoran of, you know, there's this mindless fury and violence, and, you know, unlike Orlanth, where violence is always an option, for Zorak Zoran, violence is the only option. But he's also this spellcaster. He's got these other bag of tricks that he's got, things that he's stolen, fire and other things. And so to be able to at least sometimes choose. Sometimes the die is going to say, no, you're just berserk. But sometimes you can say, hey, I've got this other thing, and surprise, there's a fire elemental, or surprise, here's a legion of zombies that I just called up, or other, you know, other just horrific death-dealing things that he can pull out of his bag of tricks that make it a really interesting character class to play, and showcases something that's different between, you know, darkness and the things that can be hidden in it, and the more blustery storm drive of Stormbolt.
So unlike Stormbolt, where you basically set up this grid, the berserk engine, if you will, Zarak-Zarani work a lot more like wizards or sorcerers or clerics, where you have there are powers by level, and as you level up, you get to pick so many powers of certain levels as you go up. So that actually changes a lot on how you would play the Zarak-Zarani. But as you kind of, and we look through the powers, which ones stood out? Mark, you mentioned Eat Chaos. Let's start with that one. And then, like, what are some of the Zarak-Zarani's abilities that you're like, this is something I could not wait to use at the table?
Well, for me, it kind of went hand in hand. There were two powers. There's a fifth level power called Crush Spirit. If they one nearby enemy with 100 or fewer hit points, you hit them, they drop to zero. And if they're chaos, you eat them and heal. It's like bam, bam. You just, because the trigger is they get dropped to zero. So you can bam, bam, heal yourself and they're down to zero, mm-hmm. which is pretty neat, pretty devastating. I don't care what level you are. If you've got 90 hit points and you can go, I'm going to drop you to zero and then eat you.
And at ninth level, that goes up to 250 hit points, which, I mean, when you look at ninth level monsters, you're still going to have to whittle them down to get them to 250 hit points. But yeah, that's a great combination. I really liked Champion of Hate also at fifth level, where you can pick one enemy as a quick action and say, I don't care what happens on my Berserker die, you are always considered a tasty enemy. So you have a little bit of control, but it's like rooted in this like undying hatred that Zarak-Zaran kind of imparts to his worshippers.
And if I was going to be building a character in this, I would definitely take the Bludgeon spell, which is a first level one, but it allows you to increase your weapon damage dice by a size as long as it's effectively a blunt instrument. You know, so if you're wielding, let's say, a D10 great club, then all of a sudden it's a D12.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this character is especially seemed to be geared toward one that can go in and deal in a lot of damage. This would be one that I probably would fire off as quickly as possible while I still knew that I was going to be in control and be able to cast this. That way, when I do go berserk, the damage is going to be that much more deadly.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Becca?
The Embarrass Fire and Sky.
That's another one that I love. Do you wanna walk through how that one works?
Yeah, I think I like it, again, along with the Captured Fire Elemental, in because it links back to that myth of eating and absorbing the fire from Yumalio. And it is, you target a nearby enemy that's ninth level or lower, and this is a seventh level power, so there's the possibility of targeting someone who is above you in levels. It's not just those that are weaker than you, and you attack their PD, and if you hit, the target loses half of its current hit points. Yeah, when save ends, they get all their hit points back, but if they go even two rounds at half
mm-hmm.
of their current hit points, I mean, you can get low enough that here's Crushing Spirit, or
mm-hmm.
you know, Eat Chaos in the next, I mean, it won't be chaos because it has to be against someone who has who's associated with the fire sky route. So it is limited on who you can do this against. But yeah, half, and that's at like ninth level or lower.
Yeah. And then you add...
That's a lot of hit points.
Mm-hmm. And then you add the fact that you can add Moon in there with an epic feat. And mm-hmm. suddenly, that's a large number of foes that you can just be like, nope, I'm sorry. Everyone target that guy.
Right.
What about you, Evan?
Yeah.
Well, so Chastise Undead is one of the interesting, it's a third level special power. And Zoroxaran has this interesting, he's a death god, but he has this interesting relationship with certain undead creatures in that, you know, his worshippers never stop fighting. Their spirits go to hell to fight chaos with him, and their bodies stay behind and are reanimated to keep on fighting things and wreaking havoc. And so, of course, doesn't control all undead, but Chastise Undead allows you to cause something at its base level, 100 hit points or lower, to become confused, which means that it attacks one of its allies, which means essentially the disorder that Zoroxaran radiates through the berserker allows him to pluck you know, an undead opponent and turn him into an asset, and you know, so that has this mythic resonance, and you know, it really differentiates his kind of interpretation of death and undeath from something like a Umakdi, who's this very honorable, and death is supposed to be an ending, and you're now, no part of you is supposed to come back, you're supposed to stay mm-hmm. dead. And Zoroxaran is like, I use all the parts of right. everything.
So, Mark, let's start with you. You love Storm Bowl. You played Storm Bowl. You made the comment when we were saying we're going to do an entire episode on Zoroxarani that it cannot compare to Storm Bowl. How does it compare to Storm Bowl?
I will say I was wrong. It looks to be a blast to play. And I would say, just to kind of one of the powers Nick mentioned, you know, it has to be a bludgeoning weapon. If you pick up a sword, your GM needs to have a talk with you. So why are you playing as Zoroxarani? It just, no. If you pick up a sword, it's to break it and or turn it into a club or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be a hoot to play just because the Storm Bowl is fun, but it's really not as chaotic as this. This is really a chaotic berserker. You don't know if he's going to summon the undead, steal the escalation die that you need because you've been rolling crappy this night, and oh what? No, don't turn it back to from a 3 to a 2. And sorry, and this looks to be a lot of fun to play.
What about the rest of you, both iconic members and Evan? Like, what are your thoughts? Is this a class that you would play?
Yeah, I definitely like to play it. I enjoy those characters that are in there dealing a lot of damage. I like the random aspect of it. I think between this and Storm Bowl, I probably would go with Storm Bowl just so that I could have a little bit more of say in the strategy or the tactical aspect of it.
Well, I'll jump in. I mean, I think, yeah, this is a class that's interesting and has a lot of options. And it also has a lot of role-playing potential because, you know, you have the sort of iconic and somewhat of a jerky, you know, god to look towards, but in the broader society, particularly the trolls, is that, you know, this is a very important war god, a god that you know, organizes their if you could use that word, their thoughts about how to fight. And so then, you know, to trade against the archetype and you know, have, you know, more of a controlled war leader or up and coming warrior, maybe following some of the earlier stuff of being more sneaky, more thoughtful, and yet, you know, when it comes down to it, then it's just pure violence. I think there's a lot of depth that it offers besides you know, layered the way that 13th Age does so well on top of the mechanic to create a rich and deep role-playing experience.
About a week ago, I was playing in a game with JM, and JM kind of warned the other players, beware of the day that Becca plays a disorder, chaotic class, because you will rue that day. And this would be the class I would play in order to fully bring disorder to the game.
So you're saying you want to, when Sandine goes away, play as a Roxorani and at least RuneQuest?
I mean, I think that would be fun. I'm all for it.
Well, to kind of wrap this up, we talk about this basically every time when we look at a class from 13th Age Glorantha. How would you reskin this? Do you think you can lift the Zoroxarani Berserker class and put it in the Dragon Empire or a more classical fantasy setting? And if so, how would you do that?
Yes, I think you could. So I was talking with a friend about this class, and I was talking about how it's a fascinating one with being a berserker and yet with spells. That's not something you see tied together. And I linked it to Guardians of the Galaxy and the berserker character Drax. And if he could summon, like, Groots to fight with him, well, welcome to chaos, right? And so I was like, well, yeah, you could put it in a fantasy setting. Because I just took it from Bronze Age all the way out to, you know, science fiction. All right, typical fantasy setting, then that's kind of in the middle. You should be able to do that. And yeah, because there are plenty of gods in any fantasy role-playing game that are a bit on that berserker, chaotic warrior side. I mean, even something like Ares from the Greek gods. If you have a god like that and you are following them, and you get enough blood around you, you lose control, that would be like this berserker class.
I like that a lot. I was thinking of tying it more into the necromancy side and somebody who dabbled too much with death that they've gone crazy and they can't always control. So like in the Dragon Empire, I would give him like a conflicted relationship with the Lich King and the Great Gold Worm, or the Lich King and the Archmage, this fact that, like, there's these two diametrically opposing powers within him, and sometimes they just get out of control a little bit, and it's okay. My zombie minion will help us.
Or the Crusader.
The Crusader would be another great one.
I would use with a Berserker, because it doesn't matter if you're harnessing the powers of undeath, as long as those demons go down.
I guess initially when I started thinking about this question, the image came to mind of like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or even like a Bruce Banner, the Hulk, you know, where there is an element of control and super intelligence, but then the beast is released. And you know, that sort of mindset or that sort of description would be a relatively simple port into a fantasy setting. You know, easily could tie it to the Archmage, you know, experiment gone wrong. But the more I was thinking about it, I also was thinking that there might be a good tie-in to like the Druid or the High Druid, where this is the wild nature that's coming out and the wildness that's taking over.
Yeah, I immediately thought about the Lich King. You know, probably conflicted because you're not quite moving his agenda forward. And the Crusaders, because the ends justifies the means, doesn't matter. But I can also see the Orc Lord, where you turn it in instead of a troll skeleton. It's you're raising your past comrades to fight for you, but they're not quite under your control. So they run around and do their thing. So if you're, you know, with the Orc Lord, it would work too.
My thought is that you could reflavor it and tweak it a bit to have it be someone under the influence of the not quite dead, not quite alive white, and you know, reflavor the fire powers and, you know, frost powers. And, you know, maybe the minion you have is an undead kobold of white nature. And, you know, then, of course, you pull in, you know, however you are handling the white in your game and its relationship to the icons, whether it's the necromancer or the three or great gold worm. You know, that there's this, you know, set of champions warriors, and of course the white being trapped in its form of perhaps a some kind of lich-like dragonish form has imbued them, and you know is pretty pissed off, and so are its minions, and I think that that could be really pretty cool.
This is why we invite you back, Evan, because you bring it back around to the white dragon for us. Well, Evan, thank you for coming on and sharing Glorantha knowledge. If only we had a show where you and I could just talk about... Wait, we do! In case you skip to the end, because that's how you enjoy digesting podcasts, by starting with the end and working backwards. There is a new show on the Iconic Production YouTube channel. It is a video show where Evan and I talk about Glorantha and how to get into Glorantha. And a lot of people think that Glorantha is very dense and that is off-putting. And that is not really the case. I mean, it is very dense, but you don't need to do anything but kind of step into the stream and get your feet wet to get started. And that's kind of what we're hoping to do with the show. So it's once a month. It's an hour long. Go check it out when you can. And any final thoughts on the Zorak Zorani class?
I just have a lore question. There's a power called a touch of the old rat's laugh. What is the background on that? Because it doesn't really explain how it ties in.
Evan?
Yes, I'll take that one. So rat's laugh is the Celestial Court's original owner of the Disorder Room. So he's the first sort of trickster individual who upsets order, and so Ratzlaff has disappeared and faded from importance, other than, you know, as the mythological background to why there is disorder in the world, and other trickster gods like Yermal have taken up disorder more. But in order to have access to disorder, that traces Zoraxaron's runic links back to Ratzlaff, mm-hmm. where disorder first came into the world.
Right. There's this, I don't want to say, there's this refinement of powers as you look at the Glorantan mythology, and not powers as in like cool things that they do, but like the celestial powers. So you have kind of the primordial expressions, you have the Celestial Court expressions, and then as we get closer and closer to when the Man Rune really is formed, and like the Men of Darkness, the Trolls, or the Plant Men, the Elves, they start coming in. These powers go from these ideas, and they start anthropomorphizing down and down and becoming more like the peoples that worship them and tell stories about them. So Ratzlaff is kind of an intermediary, I would say, between like Ermal and Zorak Zoran and disorder as a cosmic concept. As always, thank you all for listening. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with another episode. We're going to be talking with Tim, the creator, publisher, editor, creative guru of Escalation Magazine, the 13th Age fanzine. And then in October, we're hoping to do another live show. So if you want to get in on that, we will be posting the poll to see kind of what questions you want us to talk about. And then, as always, patrons are invited in to the live show to hang out with us for an hour and talk 13th Age or basically whatever you guys want to talk about. So until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and good gaming. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.